Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Emergency medical services across Pennsylvania are in jeopardy. There are between 900 and 1,000 EMS services today, compared to twice that many in the early 1990s. When you call 911 for an ambulance after a medical emergency, one will show up, but it much may take longer to get to you. Rural areas of the state are especially feeling the pinch. What precipitated this crisis and what can be done about it? Our guest today, Donald DeRamis, Legislative Committee Chair with the Ambulance Association of Pennsylvania, Jason Campbell, CEO of South Central EMS Service, and David Sanko, who is Executive Director of the Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. You know, I think a word that, and I try to stay away from using it, is the word crisis. But the more I looked at this, I saw that word being used most often. So let me start with you, Donald DeRamis of the Ambulance Association of Pennsylvania. Aren't we in a crisis situation? What is the situation right now with EMS across Pennsylvania?
We're in a multifaceted crisis right now. From a staffing perspective, we can't get workforce. We have a reimbursement crisis where we don't get paid adequate reimbursement for what we're doing, the work that we're doing. We have a violence crisis where we're actually seeing more EMS providers being accosted in the street or injured, and other issues that are going on in our community.
And we will talk about all those things, but you think it does rise to the level of being a crisis right now?
It's been a crisis. This isn't just happened. It's been going on for the last 5-10 years.
So, Jason Campbell, South Central EMS, you cover like 7 municipalities in Dauphin County. Are you experiencing the same thing that was just described?
Yes, we're experiencing the exact same thing as described. It's not only, again, with South Central EMS, it's occurring all across the state.
Mm-hmm. Like, give me some examples of you know, some of the funding issues. The violence one is maybe surprise some people. You've experienced that too.
Oh yes. In fact, in the past 2 weeks, South Central EMS providers have been assaulted. We have a couple criminal cases going on right now with EMS providers that were assaulted. So years ago, it's something that we did not have to worry about, but it's becoming more and more frequent.
Who's doing the assaulting? I mean, when a crew goes out and, you know, is the patient out of hand? Bystanders? What?
For us specifically, it is actually the patient that gets out of hand. It's rarely family members and or bystanders. For us specifically, it's been the patient. It could be a simple chest pain call that we're responding to, or there's no indication that there's going to be violence that turns into a violent call. It's not always the call specifically as an overdose or comes in to assist the police department that we're experiencing violence. It could be a simple call as a sick person that comes in non-emergency where we experience violence.
Just don't want to cooperate.
That's correct.
See, my first thought, and you touched on it, was opioid crisis. And we'll talk about what that has done with the number of calls that you're getting across the state. But that was my first thought, was that you have someone in an overdose situation that may not be obviously in the right state of mind, and that's who would be assaulting the crew members, the EMTs.
Yeah, it's definitely not, and it can happen, but not always as far as being an overdose or an assault victim. Or a high-risk call that many people, the regular citizens, the public would think that we will get assaulted on. It's generally speaking a chest pain call or a shortness of breath or a sick person that comes in, maybe even non-emergency that we're responding to. Obviously, anything that comes through a PSAP, a public safety answering point, is considered an emergency. But for us, no lights, no sirens would be non-emergency. Those are also high-risk calls as well.
Mm. You never know what you're going to get out there. there.
That's correct.
Now, Dave Sanko, I have to admit that I got the idea for this show in and actually in an article in your monthly magazine for Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors provided some great information about just how dire this situation is across the state. What have you heard from your members, township supervisors across the state, about what they're experiencing right now?
It's astonishing. It is it is indeed a statewide problem, but even more exaggerated. People think it's just in the rural areas, but it's everywhere. You know, people think nothing of picking up their phone or paying, you know, $50 or $60 a month to have a cell phone, and everybody's got, you know, sometimes multiples of those. And they expect when they dial that cell phone, when they dial 911, that somebody's going to come if they need an ambulance. But they won't make a $50 or $60 contribution to an ambulance association to be able to guarantee that life saving service is going to be prepared or possible. Townships have an obligation to make sure that from a safety perspective, that those kinds of services are able to be provided in their communities, and we coordinate with first responders and the county to try and ensure that that's happening. But it's become increasingly tougher as volunteers are becoming scarcer and scarcer, and the costs of the services continue to escalate and broach on affordability.
Do you know what percentage or maybe even how many of your townships, your members, do have like a dedicated source of funding for the local EMS?
I don't know exact number. I know that some do have an EMS tax. Some use the local services tax. Some use a portion of their property taxes. But you know, residents are you know, there's competing interests for all those dollars. I mean, nobody likes to raise taxes, but they're important vital services that have to be provided.
Mm. But the point that David just made is that everyone, when they have that cell phone, whether it's cell phone or landline, hits 911, they expect someone to be there. Now, I said in my introduction, someone will be there. It just may take a little bit longer. But what that leads me to believe is that this is something that we Pennsylvanians have taken for granted, that we just, this is part of the deal. That you dial 911, you're told that's what you do. If there's chest pains, a medical emergency, someone is going to be there, and someone is going to either treat you immediately or get you to a hospital where you can be treated. Is that happening right now? I mean, I get the sense that there are very few people in this state that realize how bad this situation is.
Yeah, it's really difficult to explain. I don't think people understand the cost involved in running an ambulance service. You're talking a basic life support ambulance with two EMTs on it. To run that for a year, if they're paid staff, you're looking at $500,000. And to do a paramedic service, you're looking at about $800,000 or more. And that's, our field is very technical. We're not just picking you up, putting you in a truck, and driving you to the hospital. Paramedics are got to the advanced stage now where they're actually diagnosing MIs in the field, heart attacks in the field, notifying the hospital, and those people are going directly to a cath lab. Same with strokes. We're doing more technological advancement where we can identify strokes and get those people to a stroke center or a comprehensive stroke center where their clot can be dissolved and their outcome is much better.
You want to get to a stroke center if you're having a stroke, you have a better chance.
Same with the trauma center.
And trauma centers in urban areas, it's a lot closer because most trauma centers are in urban areas. But in a rural township, say in north central Pennsylvania, trauma centers are few and far between, right?
Correct. And that's part of the rural problem on any call is because rural services are failing and going away, a service that's more progressive or better organized may take those areas. But then they may be on the road for 2 hours and not in that service area because they're servicing another area. So their turnaround time is much longer than in an urban setting.
Just for context, the difference between an EMT and a paramedic?
EMT does basic care, CPR. They can do some advanced things now, like do your blood sugar. They can give naloxone for the opioid crisis. They can give EpiPens in an anaphylactic reaction. But that's pretty much basic care. Where paramedics, more advanced care, give intravenous lines, intravenous medications, put airways in your trachea, do advanced airways, they can defibrillate, cardiovert. It's a much bigger thing.
Jason, are you a paramedic?
Yes, I am. I'm a paramedic as well. And I wanted to dovetail off of that. Gone are the days are gone as far as quote-unquote ambulance drivers. The citizens...
Yeah, you don't hear that very often.
You don't hear that a lot. That's correct. Those days are gone. You're dealing with trained professionals who dedicate their lives to the general public and to the service of emergency medicine working out on the street. They dedicate many, many hours daily.
For very low pay.
Dedicate many hours of training, constant continuing education throughout the year to maintain their certification. So again, gone are the days are an ambulance showing up, throwing you in the back of an ambulance and taking you to the hospital. We're doing didactic, we're doing very intense treatments there on scene. We're basically quote unquote the doctors on the street coming to assist you. And you're getting, again, trained professionals that dedicate their lives to EMS.
So you consider yourself a healthcare worker?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take
a... That's a big distinction.
Go ahead, Dave.
Ambulances are, they are no longer just the transporters to healthcare services. They are healthcare providers.
Mm-hmm. And you know, something that, again, I didn't realize is that if you show up at a scene to treat someone but don't transport them, you don't get reimbursed?
Not currently.
So, I mean, that would seem to, even if you, what about supplies and all that?
Let me rephrase that. There is one insurance carrier in the state that actually does pay for that, but it's by contract.
But for the most part,
The majority of them do not pay.
You show up and you revive someone or you treat that person, but it's not to a point where they need to go to the hospital. There's no reimbursement for you.
The logical one is the insulin-dependent diabetic who took his insulin, his blood sugar dropped, he became lethargic or unconscious. You go out with the ambulance, you revive him with dextrose, you bring him back, his blood sugar's stable. He really doesn't need to go to the emergency room to sit in the ER, eat a lunch or eat a meal there and have his blood sugar checked again and incur an ER charge. He can be left at home. So those things are what we're looking at getting paid for.
What's it called, cost?
Depends on region, really. So advanced life support call, there's real charges and there's actual what we get paid for it. So usually an advanced life support call, you're looking at getting paid about $400 to $500 for an advanced life support call.
Okay, but, and that's $400 to $500 if you don't transport that patient that you don't get.
Correct.
Okay.
Another group that I think, and you know, I guess maybe sometimes we don't like to talk about it, but that oftentimes these folks have to treat and then don't transport our opioid overdoses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got a lot of that going on in the state, and the state is focusing a fair amount of money into treatment, but I would suggest that maybe they ought to be directing some of that money into the reimbursements for ambulance services and for those first responders who are reviving and providing those life-saving circumstances.
And David,
they're doing it and they get nothing, and oftentimes the person they revive is maybe hostile, but if nothing else, certainly doesn't want to go to a hospital.
In regards to the Narcan, which was astonishing to me.
By the way, Narcan, let me just interrupt for a second. For those who don't know, that is what most first responders, it is a drug to bring back someone who is suffering an opioid overdose. And so almost all, I guess all first responders are...
And police
are equipped with it today. You can buy it over the counter.
And the public can buy it, too.
Right. Go ahead, Jason. I'm sorry.
What I was going to say was, in regards to the Narcan, up until recently, although police and fire were receiving Narcan for free through the state, also individuals who had a family member that would overdose could receive that medication for free from their local pharmacy. EMS was still paying, and most services are still paying for the Narcan. So we're paying for the Narcan, and we're not receiving that revenue. We're actually using the Narcan.
What's it cost?
It used to be about a $4 or $5 drug in the early 90s. Now it's about $50-$60 a dose.
Why?
Probably use.
Supply and demand.
That's an unfortunate supply and demand right there. I'll tell you. Okay. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, David Sanko, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors, Jason Campbell, CEO of South Central EMS Service, and Donald DeRemus, Legislative Committee Chair with the Ambulance Association of Pennsylvania. We're talking about a crisis in Pennsylvania. First responders, or I should say EMS, that has a lack of funding, and we have half as many as we did just 25 years ago. There are some other issues involved as well, as you've heard during the program. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. And on Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Today is an example of WITF's Transforming Health Project. For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health online at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross. Let's take a phone call from Phil in Lancaster. Phil, you're on the air.
Hi. First off, I want to thank you for having this topic on the air. EMS is one of the first responders that is the first to be ignored. I used to be an EMT in Pennsylvania and Maryland, and Maryland's system, it's all organized, it's all municipal, it's all fire-based, and whereas Pennsylvania, our system is completely piecemeal. And so I think the best solution for all of this is that we need to elevate EMS to the same level as police and fire, rightfully so, and we need to start having a municipal third service that's strictly dedicated to EMS. Now, there's municipal service in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, but it's part of the fire department. And, I mean, but really what we need is we need some devotion to EMS at the municipal level.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Dave Sanko, what about that?
I think the caller is right, and there needs to be that. You know, earlier, Scott, you had used the term first responders, and that said we're really just talking about EMS, and we certainly are, and this show is about the EMS. But the same conditions are happening with fire services. People expect that when they call, someone's going to come up with the fire out, and they too are suffering with a lack of volunteers. So funding is something that local communities need to participate in. And one of the things that we encourage the members to do is to have open, transparent communications with their first responders, be they fire or EMS, and understand what the fiscal needs are and be supportive of those fiscal needs. But, you know, the municipal government isn't or can't just be an ATM machine either, where they just go and are handing out money. There's got to be accountability because there's limited resources, and everybody's got it competing for the same dollars. But it's a critical service that has to be funded.
Dave, what about funding from the state? I'm going to talk to Don about that in just a moment. But, I mean, this is something that, again, I think if we go back to Phil's phone call, we're very traditional here in Pennsylvania, and there may be a lot of people don't realize that ambulances are not always tied to fire departments. But what kind of help does the state need, do municipalities need from the state in this area?
I think one of the things that what the state should be doing is trying to make it easier instead of complicating things with regulations and raising the cost of providing services and setting you know, maybe sometimes unreasonable standards. But, you know, there's funding options as well. I mean, they could there's a lot of suggestions that are coming out of the SR6 Commission report. They could provide incentives for EMS providers to businesses to allow people to respond during their work hours and get tax credits for that. For first responders to be able to get write downs on their college loans. There was a suggestion about having mortgage assistance for first responders. But you know, if we think about the amount of money that the state collects, as an example, for the 911 services. I mean, millions and millions and millions of dollars are collected to build the most robust, the most technically advanced 911 service, so that when you dial 911, somebody's going to answer the call. But maybe, I would suggest maybe some of that money should be diverted into helping make sure that after the call is answered, there's some responders there to respond to the call.
Mm. So, the same question, the things that the caller, Phil, brought up. Am I correct in saying that a lot of people probably don't realize? I mean, do we have any idea what percentage of ambulances are tied to fire departments?
I couldn't give you that statistic off the top of my head. Reason that we're so diverse in the EMS world is because this is a commonwealth, so there's not one size fits all for anything. Most of the organizations started as volunteer services, actually started as funeral directors, transporting bodies, which morphed into volunteer services. And with the enactment of the first law in 1985, the first EMS Act, it kind of mandated staffing for us, which brought the career staff into the world. And volunteer incentives are good, but in the current EMS structure in Pennsylvania, if you're advanced life support, you have to be staffed 24/7. So you really can't have somebody responding from their house to do an ALS call. They have to be on site and out the door in 3 minutes.
So are you saying to me that the lack of volunteers, and this is something that fire departments across Pennsylvania experience too, as Dave brought up, that the lack of volunteers is not as big of an issue as the funding issue?
It is in the rural area, because the rural communities rely more on volunteers than some of the urban centers, just because of call volume. Mm-hmm. So if you're a service and you're only running 500 calls a year, you really can't support a troop career staff service, because there's not enough money to pay for it. So you rely on those volunteers to take those calls.
Dave mentioned regulations. Are the regulations that end up costing more money? Are the regulations that maybe you think are a little bit onerous that maybe aren't needed? I mean, we're dealing with people's lives here, people's safety, people's health. So obviously there's a need for regulation. But what about...
I'm not a regulatory person. I'm not real fond of regulations. Unfortunately, I actually sat on that group that wrote the regulations for the state of Pennsylvania for EMS. And the goal was to create a standard, so there was a standard of care out there that every Pennsylvanian would expect and every visitor would expect when an ambulance came out there. This service can have a advanced first aid person or emergency medical responder and an EMT, or this person had to have a paramedic. We tried to standardize it so the same professional level service was sought in Tioga County as it was in Philadelphia City.
Mm-hmm. Jason, are there the standards that Don is talking about, do you see that? I mean, do you see that there's a possibility of some regulations maybe that aren't needed?
The regulations that come into play are, and I'll give a quick example, is let's say going from the dog ear litter mounts to the track litter mounts.
What's that?
Okay, litter mounts are what holds the litter, what the patient is laying on inside the ambulance.
Okay.
Many years ago, probably 3 or 4 years ago, we had the dog ear litter mounts. We then changed to a standardized litter mount, and there's accident safety specifications involved with that, but there's no cost reimbursement for the service to upgrade to that actual litter mount. So I'm going to give just for numbers' sake, for additional $2,000 for each unit per se, the state requires you to upgrade to that litter mount. For a service that has one unit that's volunteer, that may be feasible, that may not be feasible. For a career department that has 14, 15 ambulances, that may be feasible, that may not be feasible. But there is no reimbursement from the state to bring your department up to the current regulation.
All right, so let's talk about the funding issue a little bit more. Insurance companies, we thought that, that this is... And I think, I keep going back to this, that people make a lot of assumptions that they dial 911, ambulance shows up, treated, taken to the hospital, that their insurance, they have what they consider good insurance, that everything is taken care of and they don't have to worry about it. Now, there may be a deductible somewhere along the line, but it's not going to cost them that much. Is that accurate? Is it an accurate description? If so, how isn't it?
There are in-network and out-of-network providers. Just like any physician, any hospital, you can either be in-network with an insurance company where you get their contracted rate, or out-of-network where you bill for your services, they pay you what they think you're worth. If you've heard the term surprise balance billing lately?
Yes.
With Air Medical and all that, that's where that's coming out of, where people are out-of-network, they use a service, and they get a bill sent, and their insurance company pays a certain portion, but then they get a balance bill for the remainder.
And it's not something that when an ambulance shows up, someone is going to ask, hey, are you in my network?
No, because you can't be in everybody's network. Like, I'm on the eastern part of the state. I can't be in the Highmark UPMC network because that's the western part of Pennsylvania. I'm particularly Capital Blue Cross area or Independence Blue Cross or Aetna or Cigna. So I wouldn't contract with a provider that's really not in my area. They wouldn't contract with you anyway.
What's the difference in compensation if you're in-network or not in-network?
Well, technically you're supposed to be able to negotiate your contracts, but they really don't. They give you a take-it-or-leave-it kind of thing. And some of that's for the Affordable Care Act, because when the Affordable Care Act was passed, there was a limitation on charges, what was paid. And it was either a percentage of Medicare or what the contract insurer wanted to pay. But most insurers have come down to the Medicare rate, mm-hmm. the Medicare reimbursement, which is federal reimbursement.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. Medicare and Medicaid traditionally do not pay. I don't know about Medicaid, but let me just stick with Medicare for a second, the federal program. Let's face it, probably the people who are in more need of your services are older, more than likely to use Medicare for their insurance. Medicare does not pay the same rates as a private insurance company. So does that make a difference to you in what you're I mean, obviously it makes a difference, but I mean, overall, is that one of the issues here of what you're reimbursed for Medicare?
So in the middle 2000s, there was two studies done by the Government Accountability Office. They come out and stated that the payment from Medicare was 6 to 17% below our cost of providing the service. So when we get reimbursed from Medicare, it's 6 to 17% below what it costs us to physically provide the service. Medicaid, and there's been changes in Medicaid that's coming in January, but Medicaid was like 60, 70% of the cost of providing the service, mm-hmm. what we would get paid.
Dave Sanko mentioned something earlier about those who become members. I think we all have received those mailers asking you to contribute to your local EMS. I actually have to say from the article I read and the research into this that I was a little surprised at the percentage of people who actually do it, which is a good thing. But how much does that offset your cost? How much is that? And Jason, I'll ask you the same question about an individual EMS. But how much of a funding source is that? Is that a reliable source?
It's important. It's not a reliable source. You can't run your service on it. I'll ask Jason on his experience for his own service, but theoretically, if you're sending out a membership program, if you get a 20% return, you're good. 20% return. And they used to be, before the Affordable Care Act, you used to be able to waive some of the balances by using that membership. So the person take a membership program, and you know, you use the ambulance, you got this balance, waive it because you're a member. You really can't do that anymore with the Affordable Care Act because you have these high deductible copays and deductible plans where you're seeing deductibles of $1,000, $1,200, and you can't waive that balance because it puts your membership program in conflict with the federal government, which is in violates the anti-kickback statute.
Mm. So, Jason, and am I correct and accurate in calling it membership? I mean, because that's mm-hmm. usually when the mailer. How many members do you have for your EMS?
I would say probably around 4,000. But I also want to dovetail off of that the biggest misconception that the public, I don't think, understands is that when they receive an invoice that their insurance is paying or that the total bill, let's say for a Medicare patient, is $1,500 for a paramedic service. Let's say the person was having chest pain. We took them to the hospital and the bill is $1,500. The service, and I'm just using for number's sake, would receive probably 300 of that. The rest of the amount that's in between that 1,500 and 300 is considered a contractual allowance. Mm. So we're not permitted to bill the patient for that in between. So for an ambulance rolling out the door at, $525 and they're receiving 350, you're already at a loss when you're rolling out the door. In regards to membership, yes, that is the correct term for it. Does it offset the expenses for individual services? I'll say every penny does help. However, in no way, shape, or form, for an organization that has a budget of $5.6 or $6 million, does that offset completely of what we're actually losing from not being reimbursed correctly?
Dave, I'm curious whether you or your members, township supervisors across the state, whether they encourage people to, the people who are living in their municipalities, to actually become members to help offset some of that cost. Or, again, is it one of the things where they're counting on municipality to help out in that area?
Well, I think some do, and others, I mean, I'm a member in my community. We encourage the members to encourage that participation. We encourage them to include their newsletters, recruiting opportunities for people to volunteer to help out. And because I think there's roles that you can play there that aren't necessarily even on the ambulance. I mean, there could be somebody who's a retired accountant who can help in the business office or something. There are other ways that we helping with grants, helping defer some of the costs that are associated. Working with the first responders to get fuel at the discounted municipal rates, other ways to help lower the cost, but certainly including memberships. Look, the world, it's becoming a bigger and bigger deal, so it's more and more important for everybody to be doing that moving forward. We're better at it than we were last year, but we're not as good as we need to be.
You know, something he just mentioned, Donald, is that, and again, we don't think about this, but this is an operating expense. When the price of gasoline is $3 a gallon compared to $2.50 a gallon, that 50 cents a gallon that goes into an ambulance makes a big difference.
Yes, it does. And in-kind services are great. And our municipalities do that for us. So, like I said, that's a great thing to do, is in-kind services from different townships. Mm.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, we're going to be talking about the series that the WITF PA Post is producing on public defenders across the state. Just an excellent piece of journalism. We're learning a lot about public defenders. That's coming up on tomorrow's program. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, Jason Campbell, CEO of the South Central EMS Service, Donald DeRemus, Legislative Committee Chair with the Ambulance Association of Pennsylvania, and David Sanko, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors. We're talking about the crisis, as it's been described in Pennsylvania, of EMS, that we have half as many as we did 25 years ago, don't have reliable and sustainable funding, and volunteers to a lesser degree may be an issue as well. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, phone number 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a call from Mitchell in Carlisle. Mitchell, you're on the air.
All right, thank you. Interesting program. I just have a question on the, I was kind of confused about the $500,000 for two paramedics and the vehicle. And sometimes, you know, these, is it a privately owned vehicle? Is there a company that's providing that service, or is it owned by the township? Because that's my question.
Okay. Well, that is a very good question. What about that, gentlemen? Hold on just 1 second. I'll turn your microphone on.
Thank you.
There you go.
The majority of services in the Commonwealth are basically non-for-profit EMS services. There are some for-profit 911 services and some municipal services, mainly in the third cities and the two major cities of Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. But like I said, the majority of services functioning today are non-profit companies.
And in regards to the amount of money, I believe you said $500,000 for a responding ambulance, you have to take in consideration that everything that is on board that ambulance, from medications to a $39,000 cardiac monitor to a $20,000 ambulance litter. And then you're also looking at workers' comp, insurance for the providers,
benefits.
And then at the very end, which is one of our most expensive expenses, is payroll.
Well, let's talk about that. A listener has a question. It seems relevant to discuss how much EMTs get paid with the level or responsibility EMTs have. I think they should be paid more. He was paid about $15 an hour, and that was after a couple years of service. I have a brother that was an EMT. They see a lot of human suffering of all kinds. In addition to getting paid more, I think they should also have regular counseling for PTSD. One of you had mentioned about low pay for EMTs. Is that an accurate figure? I mean, we're talking $15 an hour?
Before you answer that question, let me just say that I don't know any service CEO, director, or manager that does not want to pay their employees more money. The issue comes into play with reimbursement, how much we're being reimbursed. Majority of chiefs, assistant chiefs, captains, battalion chiefs, going on down the road, are paramedics. Then we also have, in the BLS service, lieutenants and captains or chiefs that are EMTs as well. And all of us want to make a livable wage. The issue comes into play again with reimbursement. If the money is not coming in the door, it's very hard for it to go out the door.
Does it keep people from seeking that career?
Actually, EMS has become a stepping stone to other healthcare services. So predominantly people start out in EMS as an EMT or a paramedic and usually progress on to becoming a nurse or a doctor or a PA.
Mm. But still, that pay that the listener is talking about, is that in the ballpark?
That's high, actually. I mean, he's at the high end of the scale. You're seeing an average in the state for an EMT from anywhere from minimum wage up to maybe $15, $16 an hour.
Minimum wage?
Minimum wage, especially in a rural Pennsylvania.
Minimum wage when they could have someone's life in their hands.
Correct. And the caller was correct on the PTSD issue. That's a huge issue now showing up in all parts of public safety. And actually, the state Representative Farry from Bucks County is really big on that issue, and they're working on a PTSD initiative in the state.
We have a listener who asked a question. He said he probably missed it, but I don't think, we did talk about the mailers, but I think it's a good thing to pass along. Wants to ask, how does one join an ambulance club, as he called it, but become a member to help offset the cost?
All they have to do is call their local EMS organization and find out if they have a membership program. I will say that hospital-based EMS companies that are owned by a hospital aren't able to do a membership program. However, I don't want to say those are few and far between, but EMS is so cyclical. Private EMS companies most have, as he stated, a membership club or a membership program.
All right, so the bottom line here and what we're talking about when it comes to funding is reliable and sustainable. What would be, and apparently that is not the case right now. It seems as though, I hate to put it this way, but we know that there are a lot of fundraisers. For example, a lot of barbecue chicken events out there. I don't know how much money they raise.
I have to see one of these barbecue chicken. They're not really prevalent up in Lehigh Valley.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that in the South Central Pennsylvania, they are. But still, the point is that when we're talking about what someone's life could depend on, having to rely on fundraisers like that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, with reliable and sustainable funding, what could we do? And I'll ask each of you that question. But Don, what's your answer to that?
We need reimbursement for services that actually pays for the service that we're providing. We've made some headroads in with the legislature this year. For the second time in 40 years, we actually have a Medicaid increase coming January 1st. And the last time that was increased was 2004. That was a 14-year struggle to get an increase in Medicaid reimbursement. So, like I said, the average payment from Medicare was like $400 or $500 for an ALS call. We were getting $200 and $100 for a BLS call. It doesn't even pay for the guests to go out to the call.
Let me just say that, and I've received these calls at my office in regards to fundraising. Why can't we do more, as the fire departments do, have chicken barbecues or sell pizzas? The problem with that, and in all career and paid service, is if we're having chicken barbecues, we have to pay the staff to be there. Generally speaking, that would incur overtime. So the money that's going out or coming in the door from those fundraising events is going to go right back out the door in employee cost. What can be done? Municipalities across the state of Pennsylvania need to support their EMS organization. Each municipality needs to contribute to their EMS organization in some way, shape, or form. Again, you stated earlier that no one wants to raise taxes. Sometimes that's that's going to be inevitable. I mean, it may just have to happen. And again, for not only police and fire, or not just EMS, but also police and fire, there also needs to be additional legislation, which, you know, there's that's in the works.
So, Dave, you heard that, and you touched on this earlier, that municipalities are not EMTs, but, excuse me, yeah, AMT. That you're, put it this way, you're not a Mac machine. There we go. AMT, you got it. Yeah, I almost said Mac machine. When was the last time you saw a Mac machine? So what about that, Dave?
No, look, I think stable funding base actually will, to the average resident, they won't see anything different, because the services will continue as they've always been, and that's kind of the sad part. So really, stable funding base means that bad things aren't going to happen, so that we'll be able to continue to provide the services and be able to have the expectations of quality healthcare on demand when you need it. I mean, and you know, so the tough part of getting Harrisburg's attention, to get them to focus on funding and deliver answers, is sometimes there has to be a crisis. And the sad part, in this instance, I mean, it's unfortunate that people have to die for them to want to pay attention to it. I mean, you know, a lot of times they didn't want to fund, and other capitals are the same. They don't fund bridges until a bridge falls down. They weren't funding the opioid crisis until people started dying. I mean, I hope that they're willing to pay attention and recognize that these are vital, critical services, and be able to provide, willing to provide stable funding base before people start.
Let me ask this question, and I don't know whether you can answer it or not, any of you, but have there been deaths here in Pennsylvania because of an EMS couldn't get to a patient, couldn't get to a scene in time because, I don't know, the closest one folded years ago or something like that? Have there been deaths because someone, an ambulance, couldn't get there in time?
You don't have to look at deaths. You have to look at morbidity, because if you're having a stroke and it takes me another 30 minutes to get to you, that's a time-sensitive treatment. Same with a heart attack. Time-sensitive treatment. So if I don't get you into the hospital in a timely fashion because it takes me long to get out to you, or maybe somebody's delayed because you're the second service respond to that call, you may have a heart attack where your heart's damaged, that you might end up with congestive heart failure and a long-term medical problem. Or you might have a stroke where you end up in a nursing home because you're paraplegic or quadriplegic.
I agree. It doesn't have to do specifically with deaths. It has to do with the extended response time, because the volunteer service or the paid service is no longer available, so they're going to with the next closest service, which could be 15, 20 minutes away, which with a heart, time is muscle.
Let's take a call from Julie in Dauphin. Julie, you're on the air.
Yes. I think what confuses some people in my community is a particular ambulance association is who we, the membership is who we're supposed to send money in, you know, as we want to donate. But they may not be the ambulance that picks you up. So I think that confuses people, because, you know, I've heard through the township here that, especially when bills come in, because membership we have with a particular ambulance association, if you pay your membership and you get billed from your insurance company, whatever's left over or you know, didn't get paid, you don't owe then. But if you pay your membership, but another ambulance picks you up, you owe that bill, you know, no matter what it is. So there's always some confusion, you know, in our municipality. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to clear that up. Maybe if there was a countywide association that everybody paid for instead of one particular one.
Thank you very much for your call. She's right.
She's right. You really can't do a countywide thing. It runs into antitrust issues because you're collaborating. Most services, and I don't know if Jason can speak to his service, but I know our service, if we take somebody else's member, we usually reciprocate that. So we usually honor a membership from another service, because we can't staff to be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We do take calls, and there are periods where we have nothing available, and somebody has to come in and fill that void.
In addition to that, like I said, most services have reciprocal membership agreements where if you're the second due unit going into that area, like she said it was Dolphin, if there's a reciprocal membership agreement, we will honor the membership of that initial service. Not all services have that reciprocal agreement. If there's a service that doesn't even have a membership program, they're not going to honor, obviously, a membership. But most services try to work together to honor each other's memberships.
You know, one of the things that strikes me as we're talking about this is that there seems to be a lack of uniformity with a lot of what's going on. Now, granted, you all said that you're not big fans of regulations, but that lack of, you know, that it's reciprocal, that it happens kind of an agreement between the two EMS services, shouldn't that be something that is statewide, that, okay, here's the situation. If one, if a person has become a member of one, that it, they automatically, that it's going to be honored?
If each organization or service had a membership program. Again,
not all do.
Not
okay.
all have a membership okay. program. Right. So you, the next closest unit coming into your service may be a hospital-based service that's owned by a hospital, and they don't offer a membership program, so therefore you can't have a reciprocal membership agreement.
And you never know who's coming.
Right.
I mean, we have service, like, let's say I'm in Lehigh Valley, so I've had services come from 2-3 municipalities away to service a municipality that couldn't get out. So there's no, they're not contiguous. You wouldn't have a membership with that person.
Okay. Okay, I understand. Then there are a lot. Pennsylvania is so different, Dave Sanko, as you know, that we have.
We're unique.
We are unique. That
we are.
That is for sure.
Clearly, the different municipalities, but we also have different fire departments, different EMS providers. But you know, there is a mutual aid platform, and sometimes it requires. Not just municipalities, but all the providers to be willing to break down boundaries and push the envelope and figure out how to do. I mean, we all dispatch out of the county, or everybody dispatches out of the county. Maybe there's a way to be able to get it in through there to run the memberships there. I'm not familiar with the antitrust things, but I suspect that's a function of having different nonprofits. Maybe the nonprofits can join into a mutual aid agreement to get past that.
Speaking of nonprofits, do you get any kind of assistance from United Way or organizations like that?
Not usually,
no. The most we'll get is if someone makes a donation that works for, let's say, United Way or another charitable 501c3 organization, the organization may match their donation.
I guess what I'm looking for is that you are affiliated some way with nonprofits. For example, Lancaster County, and York County just started doing it, has this one time a year event, Extraordinary Give, where there's over 400 nonprofits that online during the one day, people can choose from those nonprofits and contribute. And I was just wondering if like any EMT services are involved in something like that.
I haven't heard of any.
Neither have I.
No.
Well, again, I would encourage you. I'm just coming up with ideas here for you, because I think that just in the last 50 minutes when we've discussed this, see that the need for...
So should we find an EMT class for you?
I'm too old for that.
You're never too old.
Hack
has very good programs.
I do want to, in our last couple minutes, talk about the opioid crisis. Obviously, there is a real crisis that we know of, and there is no doubt that the number of calls that you are getting across the state has increased because of the opioid crisis. Don, give me a sense of just how much.
It's a tremendous amount. I'm actually a deputy coroner too, so I see it from both sides of the angle. It's amazing the number of opiates. I mean, we at least one or two a day up in Lehigh Valley.
Just one or two? Actually, I thought it'd be more.
Not really. We're starting to see more meth, and we're actually seeing more K2 and spice and synthetic marijuana, and those are the ones that usually get the assaulting on you, on the providers.
Jason, what about you?
We're not seeing a great deal of increase as far as opioid overdoses. We're pretty much stabilizing at this point in time. We're seeing more than our fair share that we were seeing 5, 6 years ago. But we're stabilizing. I would say probably maybe 2 or 3 a week.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. That actually, if there's a silver lining in this, that it's stabilizing, that's probably good news that it's not increasing because, as you said, 5 years ago, it just exploded with the number of opioid overdoses.
And I'm saying that for the areas that I cover specifically. Right, that can be totally different, like down in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh.
I have to give a shout-out to Secretary Levin of the Department of Health and Deputy Secretary Ray Barashansky. They've done a tremendous amount of work across the state on the opioid epidemic.
I would agree 100%.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Hope we're able to shine a light on this issue across Pennsylvania. David Sanko, Executive Director, Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors. Jason Campbell, CEO of South Central EMS Service. And Donald DeRemus, Legislative Committee Chair with the Ambulance Association of Pennsylvania. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And again, coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about public defenders here in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, again, unique in that situation as well, as you'll hear on tomorrow's program.